Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. I'm in a relationship with someone who I accurately know is unhealthy for me, but I'm not able to give it up. How do we gather the strength to let go of someone whom you have been with for so long and loved so much? Well, the first piece of this is we really have to ask ourselves, and it's good, this ties in nicely with the first question. We really have to ask ourselves, what do we mean by being unhealthy for me? And that requires a lot of real introspection. So, for example, I like to be right. Now, if I were in a relationship with someone who were telling me that I was wrong, that would be difficult for me because I have, you could say, and I'm not—I don't necessarily mean me specifically. I'm playing roles here. I do like to be right anyway, but we'll play it a little bit even bigger. I've got an attachment to being right all the time about everything. Everything has to be my way or no way. Because I am the smartest. I am the one who knows everything. And so everything has to be my way. So now let's say I get in a relationship with someone who has the audacity to say to me, maybe not in the beginning, or I wouldn't have fallen in love in the first place. Maybe in the beginning when he was courting me, he thought, wow, God, she's really smart. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Wow, that's also right. And then as we got closer, maybe he started seeing that my need to be right was actually not due to me knowing so much, but due to my fear of my own vulnerability, due to my own fear of the unknown, my fear of my worthiness. Would I be worthy if I didn't know everything? Would I be worthy if I weren't right all the time? And so he started to pick up on this, and he also noticed some things that I said that just absolutely were not right. And so he started saying to me, you know, this isn't right. That's not right. Now, if I'm still super attached in being right, to being right, I may convince myself this guy is not right for me. This guy is unhealthy for me. Look at the way he's insulting me. Look at the way he's putting me down. I need to be with someone who makes me feel good about myself, right? I mean, we can rationalize anything. I need to be with someone who's, you know, filling me and helping me grow, not somebody who's telling me I'm wrong. Well, in that particular case, being told I was wrong really would be the most important thing for my growth, if I could take it. It would force me to look at my addiction to being right. It would force me to sit in a place of vulnerability of sometimes having to say, I don't know. But my ego, if I weren't able to look at it, if I weren't already on a path psychologically and spiritually of looking at the self, my ego could absolutely convince me this guy is not good for me. And I could go out and tell my friends, God, you know, he's constantly telling me I'm wrong. He's got no respect for me. And of course, my friends would say, well, then dump him. My God, he sounds horrible. Who needs that? vitamin, you need somebody who's going to make you feel full and complete and whole. And so you see how I could rationalize getting out of a relationship that really was good. Now, I don't know anything else about this man, but at least that part was good. That part was challenging me in a safe environment to look at my own stuff, to force me to grow. But my ego, if it's scared of growing, I'm going to convince myself this guy's wrong for me. And so I would say the first thing to do is really, if we've convinced ourselves the relationship is unhealthy, to really take a look at what's unhealthy about it. Sometimes we are what's unhealthy about the relationship. And unfortunately, you're stuck with yourself. You know, wherever you go, there you are. In psychology, they call it pulling location, meaning, oh, doesn't feel so good here. I'm going to feel so much better in Tahiti. But actually, when I get to Tahiti, sitting on the beach, pina colada in hand, there I am. And so I'm not actually able to run from that. So the first piece is really analyze, is it really unhealthy? And is it really the person, the other person who's unhealthy? Or is it my way of interacting that's unhealthy? And maybe the universe has given me this person to help me wake up. Otherwise, I mean, you could look at all the other things in our life we have relationships with other than people and say, well, that's unhealthy. I mean, you could say poverty is unhealthy. When the stock market crashes and I lose my life savings, that's unhealthy. Getting a disease is unhealthy, literally. Having a loved one die is unhealthy. I don't want that. I want out of that relationship with life. If we had the ability, a lot of us would get out of those relationships in which we lose that which we care about. Now, we don't have that ability. We can't walk away from the stock market that has crashed, the loved one who has passed away. And what that does, the reason I mention it, is it forces us to realize, well, God, you know, the universe that's so committed to my awakening, that's so committed to my unfolding, that's so committed to me discovering who I am and uniting with God, keeps throwing me these things that don't feel good. And what that teaches us is that feeling good is not always synonymous with what we need on our spiritual path. Now, of course, that does not mean be a masochist and, you know, force yourself to stay in situations that are horrible for you. But it just means be honest with yourself and really check within about what is it I'm walking away from. And might this not actually simply be an opportunity that the universe has given me for personal growth? And I'm passing it away. You know, Pujaswamiji gives a beautiful saying of Lakshmiji, who's considered to be the goddess of wealth and prosperity. He says, you know, sometimes Lakshmiji comes to tilak us, means to, you know, to bless us, to put the tilak on our head, but we've turned our face in the other direction. So the goddess is there, but we've turned our face in the other direction. And so I would say for the first aspect of this, make sure that you're not turning your face away from actually that which is supposed to be on your plate right now. If it really is unhealthy, if it's undeniably unhealthy, for example, you're being abused emotionally, physically, sexually, in any way. In any way you're being abused, it's unhealthy, get out. Or if there are other ways that you know you're being manipulated, you're being made to feel small, you're being whatever it may be, that you really, really know is a situation you cannot grow in. Well, that's where we have the courage to walk away from it. But those situations are much, much rarer. Much rarer than most of us think. Pooja Swamiji also says frequently, he says, you know, leaving is losing. If you've been given a situation, you've been given it for a reason. But these days, so many of us have become so habituated to sort of instant gratification. You know, drive-through food and ATM machines, you need money, you stick your card in, you get money, you drive around a window, you get food. You need something, you go online in 30 seconds, now on your phone, Amazon, it's here the next day, sometimes the same day. Soon they'll have drones. You know, I mean, you'll think it basically. And some smart something you're wearing will know that you're thinking it and will connect with Amazon or whoever is working at that time, and the drone will drop it in your lap. So we've become so habituated to getting everything immediately. Having so many options. Don't like this one? Okay, take this one. Don't like that? Take this. The world literally has opened up to us over the last couple decades. I mean, literally in a way unprecedented in history. But along with that fantastic opening of the world has become this belief that somehow there's something better than what we have. If I just look a little harder, that website, this shopping site, this one, that dating site, this, whatever it may be that I'm looking for, I'm gonna find it somewhere better somewhere else. And it's really important that we not let the marketing of technology seep into the beat of our hearts and change how we move through our relationships in the world. So if it really is unhealthy, get out. I mean, yeah, it takes a little bit of willpower. If you're diabetic and the doctor says, stop eating laddus, okay, you want to eat them, you love them, you've always eaten laddus. But at some point, you're going to choose your health over the laddus. Every time you eat one, you have a diabetic crash. Eventually, you stop eating them or you die. One or the other. So if you want to live, you stop eating the laddus, you stop eating the cake. In the same way, as addicted as we may be or comfortable as we may be on some warped level in a relationship that really is abusive, you've got the same choice the diabetic has. Either leave it or die. Physically, emotionally, spiritually. But, as I said, worth emphasizing again at the end, those are the very rare situations. In the vast, overwhelming majority of situations, it's our ego that has gotten uncomfortable with a situation and therefore has convinced us that it is unhealthy for us simply because it doesn't feel good with my current ego identification. So be careful of those, because then otherwise you just spend your life running from relationship to relationship to relationship.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi.
This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit RAIN.org, that's RAINN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. The right time to begin a spiritual path is right now. Right now. A better time is yesterday, but unfortunately we can't do that. An even better time would have been last year. But since we can't do that either, the very best time that we actually still have any control over is right now. Right now. There is absolutely nothing in our lives that cannot or should not coexist with our spiritual path. There is nothing in our life that you could legitimately say, I need to do this first, and then I'm going to be spiritual. Unless what you wanted to do first was just live a completely mindless, you know, hedonistic life, and you said, wait, let me just, you know, eat as much as I can eat, drink as much as I can drink, have sex with as many people as I can, absolutely just be as reckless and mindless as I possibly can be. That wouldn't go so well with spirituality. It would be very difficult to simultaneously continue to live that life as you embarked on a spiritual path. So if you were attached to that life for any reason, you would have to put off your spiritual practice. Because the minute that you started really meditating, that you started introspecting, that you started connecting spiritually, you can't keep living on the surface. But assuming that that's not your goal, assuming that your goal is not how superficial of a life can I possibly live, the time for spirituality is right now. Everything else is what we do. Spirituality is who you are. And so it would be like saying, what would be the right time to be a man? So, well, I mean, I am a man. I mean, I have a job, I have family, I have this. But you're a man doing those things. There's no contraindications between that. There's no contradictions between that. The man is who you are, also on a very superficial level. Spirituality is much deeper, but at least on a certain level, it's who you are. And as that man, you're going into your job. As that man, you're going into a marriage. As that man, you're having a family. As that man, you're having friends. Well, in the same way, on an even deeper level, as a spiritual person, or on an even deeper level, as spirit, as consciousness, you are in a body that is currently in the form of a young man who has a job. You are spirit, you are consciousness in the body of a young man who has a wife and kids. There's no contradictions there. In fact, you're going to be much better as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as a man, by identifying most deeply as the fact that you're consciousness and spirit. Because that then dictates how you do it all. Simply having a job is not, you know, such a great accomplishment. I mean, it's good, congratulations, you know, you get up every day and put food on the table. That's wonderful. But my point is there's billions of people around the world who have jobs. There's billions of people in the world who have marriages and children and families. We all have families. What makes you unique, what makes you something other than just everything else that's going on, is connecting to spirit, connecting to consciousness. That's what makes you not just the actor merged with the mask who thinks you are man, who thinks you are your job or that you are your relationships. Connected to spirit will help you as you move through, as you do all of this, know how to do it. And then the side beautiful bonus and benefit is you'll pass it on to your children. You'll pass it on to those who are with you. And you'll actually be a part of bringing about a change in the world, because what we need are more and more people connected to spirituality. If everybody waits until they're, you know, old and retired and they've done everything and okay, well, so I've done it all, now I guess I'll be spiritual. You know, I mean, good for them. At least they've got, you know, they've figured it out still at some point before the deathbed. But wouldn't it be so much nicer to have that all along? You know, it's like my favorite psychology experiment that I always talk about, of the students who were given this task of watching the basketball game. And the experiment was, the researchers took all of these subjects and they said, okay, your job is, you're going to watch this 6-minute basketball game, and there's a red team and a white team, and you're going to count their baskets, how many baskets each team made. End of the 6-minute game, they were each given a questionnaire. How many baskets did the red team make? They all answered correctly. How many baskets did the white team make? They all answered correctly. Third question, which was really the part of the point of the experiment. Third question said, did you notice anything else? And more than 50% of them said no. And now it turns out that halfway through this basketball game, into the center of the court, an enormous gorilla, I mean a person dressed as an enormous gorilla, came onto the middle of the basketball court and started dancing, occupying the full camera frame that was videoing the basketball game. For 30 seconds, this gorilla danced. And more than half the students missed it. Now, you could say they weren't paying attention, but clearly they were paying attention because they all counted the number of baskets properly. They hadn't blinked, they hadn't sneezed, they hadn't looked away, they hadn't had a nap, because otherwise they would have miscounted baskets. They got all the baskets, missed the gorilla. And the reason they missed it was, and this was what the study was looking at, it wasn't what they were told to look for. They had been given very clear instructions. This is a basketball game, count the baskets. And they did it. And nobody said to them, by the way, make sure you don't miss the gorilla. If they had also been given that as a task, nobody would have missed it. They would have all been waiting, gorilla, 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 when's it going to come? Even if they had simply been told, and by the way, there is something else. By the way, this isn't what it's about. Can't tell you what it's about, but just keep your eyes open. If they even had been given that much, they would have seen it. And I share this so frequently, and particularly right now, because this is what happens with life. We're told, okay, here's your job. Your job is get a good education, have a job, get married, raise a family. make money, put your kids in good schools, you know, do these things, fulfill your responsibilities. But nobody ever says, and by the way, there's something else. And so a huge number of people never know there was something else. Maybe on their deathbed, maybe at the moment that death comes, there's a glimmer. I don't know. Some of them get it once they've done everything else. There are no more baskets to count. The game is over. I'm staring at a blank court. Okay, now maybe I can notice the gorilla. But to ask this early in the game, by the way, is there something else I should be looking for? That's really special. And that's ultimately what the point is. So this is why the right moment is now. Keep your eyes open. Unlike the gorilla, it's not a one-time thing for 30 seconds and then it goes away. It's there in every moment. And opportunities are there in every moment to connect with that.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. Toxic people. It's a recurring theme. It's so hard. It's so hard because even when we know it in our minds, there's something in us that just reacts and responds, even if we don't speak it out loud. That reaction happens inside. And so the toxicity, it's not just that that person is toxic out there. It's that toxicity is contagious. So here's how to deal with it. First of all, as we were speaking before, yeah, it is important to understand that you are in this situation for a reason. Most of us, when we're with people like that, all we can think of is, oh my God, how can I get the hell out of here? You know, how can you get this person away from me? That's where most of our mind energy goes. And it's really important to remember that there is a reason I am in this situation. There is something I am supposed to learn in this situation. There is a layer of the onion of myself that is supposed to be peeled back. Petals of the flower of myself that are supposed to open. I mean, whatever analogy works for you. But there is a reason that I'm here. And the ultimate goal is not just how can I get out as quickly as possible. So the first step is to sink within, really to get to our own core, our own source, our own center. That's not the reactiveness on the surface. You know, if you look at the ocean, it's like the waves are on the surface. The surface is what gets impacted by high tide, low tide, full moon, whatnot. But the depth of the ocean stays the same, unaffected. And so it's important to be able to sink down and connect with that depth. Otherwise, you spend your life, you know, like a ping pong ball, kind of being bounced around from toxic person to toxic person to toxic situation, because there are a lot of them. And, you know, you may feel okay when you're with good people and not okay when you're with these people, but the life then literally just becomes like, you know, ping pong ball or a pin, you know, ball in a pinball machine even that just gets, you know, somebody else pulls and lets it go, and where it ends up, who knows. And that's what happens when how I feel is dependent upon what you're doing. So in all of these circumstances, the ultimate highest lesson for all of us is, how can the reins of my life be in my hands? And before I go on about, you know, how to deal with the situations, it's important to realize, even you use the word toxic, poison. What we know, historically, and even currently, there's all kinds of scientific research, actually. I mean, the Indian devotional history gives it to us as well. We have stories of, you know, people like Mirabai, for example, who were given a bowl full of poison, but into the poison she sees nectar, takes Krishna's name, drinks it, it becomes nectar. Okay, so that's devotional. But there's actually also a whole body of scientific research these days about religious communities in America who literally take strychnine, which is a lethal poison, but they do it in a religious environment, in a religious ceremony, and amazingly they're unaffected by it. Now this is obviously a don't try this at home example. Nobody should go and say, but Sadhviji said, you know, that if I just believe enough. I don't know the mechanism by which it works exactly. But what we know is it does happen. We know there is a mechanism whereby the state that the mind is in is absolutely able to render physical substances that chemically, molecularly are lethal, harmless. People walk on fire, hot coals, they don't get burned. Also in religious environments, again, don't try this at home. We know this. And again, this is something that science is now studying, so it's not just stories told in religious communities. And I bring that up because when we're in the environment of people who are toxic, it's very easy for us to really believe that the problem is entirely that person. And in some cases it may be. But that there is no other way of feeling, there's no other way of reacting, there's no other way of responding in that person's presence other than to feel miserable. That it would be impossible to be in that person's presence and not be troubled by it. And we take that really as just fact. This person is horrible. This person is toxic. It is a fact of that person. I need to just get out. Or remove that person. And what I love about the science of people literally drinking poison is that if strychnine isn't toxic, if somehow the power of our mind, and these are not, from the studies I've read, these are not like, you know, super, super mystical, trained religious people. It's not like the Tibetan monks who, you know, dry wet towels on their shoulders in the mountains and generate enough heat that they actually dry the towels. It's regular people. And what that means is that there actually is a power in the mind that is so strong that it can even render hot coal something that doesn't burn us, fire something that doesn't burn us, poison something that doesn't kill us, which means it's got to be strong enough to render a toxic person innocuous in our presence. You may not be able to change the person, but at least to render them inert, you could say, in our presence. You know, there's a beautiful quotation from the Buddha that says something like, become a river of compassion so that the flames of discord are automatically extinguished when they come near you. So it's not about going out to extinguish other people's flames. It's about becoming this river such that the flames are automatically extinguished. And that's the goal. Now, that's all the highest vision for you to hold of what's possible. Awareness of what's possible. But I also want to take a moment and just look at what most of our day-to-day practical, realistic situations look like. And yeah, there really are times where there are people who, for whatever karmic package reason they're going through, are toxic. And are people who literally, you know, it would be like if I had tuberculosis and I were coughing and coughing and coughing and coughing. I might not mean badly. I might be a good person at heart. You could still feel compassion for me in your heart. But being physically near me would actually be putting your life at a risk. And extricating yourself from the situation to prevent coming down with tuberculosis should not be seen as a sign of weakness. You shouldn't feel like, God, if I just were spiritual enough, if I just were compassionate enough, I would be able to stay there with her and somehow be immune to the tuberculosis. Well, maybe you are. If I were in a room of 50 people, okay, probably not all 50 of them would come down with TB, but a large number of them would. The question is that a risk you want to take? So if you have to extricate yourself from a situation with a particular person, don't feel badly about yourself about it. Recognize it as a way of having to take care of yourself. Obviously, in an ideal world, the inner power is so strong within you that that person can be all the poison they want to be, but it doesn't actually impact you. And yeah, that is the highest level to get to, and this is where we have scientifically, historically, scripturally, spiritually, these examples given to us. Why? To remind us the power of ourself, that we're not just victims of that which we drink, that which people cough on us, that which, you know, is in the energy around us. There's also power within us that can transform that. Power within us. So call upon that power as much as you can. But if you really feel that there's nothing you can do, and it's just harming you, then you need to extricate yourself from the situation and protect yourself. But what I would do before I did that was I would, especially since when you began the question, you said it was a close family member. If this were just, somebody who took their coffee at the same Starbucks you do, I would say, you know what, don't worry about it. Just sit at a different table, I mean, sure, if you've got lots of extra time and energy on your plate, you might want to investigate further. But if not, just drink your coffee someplace else. But if this is somebody in the house or someone you have to interact with on a regular basis, see whether you could do a temporary removal of yourself into somewhere that helped you develop an inner practice that were strong enough to be able to go back and neutralize that toxicity. And obviously not with saying, oh my God, you are so hideous, I've got to go now do a whole 10-day of Vipassana retreat, to settle myself so I can come back and deal with you. Not like that. But just so that we know, I'm going to increase my own shakti. I'm going to increase my own ability to generate such healing that it neutralizes all of that toxicity. And nothing's static. So if it's a person who's toxic, they're continuing to change, as we all are. They may seem to you like they're not changing, but I guarantee they're changing. Now, they could be getting worse. It's also a possibility. Not everything gets better with time. But they're definitely changing. And who you are and how you are is also playing a role in them. The same way how they are plays a role in how you feel. In the same way how you are plays a role in how they feel. And so we're impacting each other. So see whether you can impact in such a way that it neutralizes the toxins. And if not, and you've really tried everything, the Bhagavad Gita gives us the perfect example of this. Yes, there are times when, literally or metaphorically, there has to be a war. But only after you've tried everything else.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. We were speaking about our emotions, and particularly anger, as that which keeps us from being in peace, and how to connect with ourselves deep inside and not to be a victim to the rise and the fall of our emotions. And so as we were just leaving to go to Aarti, the question was asked, well, so when I feel anger, what do I do about it then? And so I said, okay, we'll start with that right when we come back. Whatever emotion we feel coming that threatens to disconnect us, that threatens to pull us out of our center, to pull us out of who we know we are. The first piece that's most important, of course, as we've been discussing, is to recognize it's not me. And so most of us say, I am angry. I am angry implies there's no option. I mean, I'm 5'3". So, okay, I can't do much about that. I'm not going to grow any taller. I'm not going to grow smaller. That's set. That's how tall my body is. But with the emotions, as we know when we really watch them, they're constantly changing. And so the patterns of chemical and electrical activity in our minds, in our brains that we call anger, they happen for a very short period of time. And it's, as I said, it's chemical and electrical patterns of behavior. It's not who I am. And one of the ways to be sure of that is, 10 minutes ago, before I was angry, who was I? If I am anger, then 10 minutes ago, who was I? An hour from now, who will I be? So clearly, I am not angry. But when we say, I am angry, it implies there's no option. But there is an option. Anger is a wave. Emotions of all sorts are waves. And they have a power of their own, the way that a wave has a power of its own. But we have a choice when a wave comes. Either we throw ourselves into it and we let it take us. Sometimes we drown. Sometimes we get washed out to sea. Sometimes we find ourselves face down on the sand with a mouthful of sand suffocating. But there's another option with waves. There's several other options with waves. One option is we stay out of the ocean. We watch it. We watch the wave come. We watch it recede. That's what you could talk about being the witness. Watching that wave of anger come. Ah, there's anger coming. Okay. And it comes and we watch it rise and rise and rise. And it's not that we're not impacted by it. We feel it. The same way that you feel, even if you're not in the ocean, you feel the spray of the wave of water coming. But you don't drown in it because you're just watching it. Another way is you're in the ocean. You're in the ocean, no problem. Deep in our lives, deep in our emotions. But when it comes, if we don't want to drown, if we don't want to be carried out to sea, if we don't want to be face down in the sand, what we do with waves is we face them and we dive deep. And anyone who has ever swum in the ocean knows this is what to do with waves. If you're swimming and a big wave comes, you can't outrun it. You can't turn around and expect you're going to get to shore before the wave gets there. So you face it. You face it. You see it coming. And then you dive deep. And the wave goes one way, and you come up the other way. And so when anger comes, you could imagine two different options for yourself. One option is just the watcher, the witness. There's my anger coming. And that's a beautiful place to be. It's a beautiful practice. This is why so many of the meditation practices and techniques teach us how to be the witness. How can we watch waves of anger come? Watch waves of frustration come. Watch waves of desperation come. Watch waves of jealousy come. Watch waves of grief come. But we're sitting on the shore and we watch them. And another way to do it is to be fully present in it. But you dive so deep into the depth of it that actually the wave doesn't drown you. And either of those is a beautiful practice. So when you are living your spiritual life, when you meditate, when you do yoga, when you try to bring meditation and yoga into your day-to-day life. Cultivate this witness practice. Can you watch yourself? And you can begin, it's hard to begin with something like anger, because anger tends to grab us. So you begin with something like eating or walking. Can you watch yourself eat? Instead of being the one who's devouring all the food, can you watch yourself eat? Yeah, no, you can eventually, but not immediately. It's hard. Can you watch yourself work? Instead of being the one getting frustrated, can you watch yourself be the worker? Can you watch yourself walk? So we begin with things that are somewhat easier. It's like if you're going to learn to swim, you can't really jump in the deep end. I mean, there are some people who teach swimming like that, but you need to be sure to have a very, very qualified, expert swim instructor. The spiritual equivalent would be the guru. So, yeah, if you've got a guru present right nearby, jump in the deep end. But in our day-to-day practice, in our day-to-day lives, we begin slowly. So if I can watch myself eat and watch myself walk and watch myself work, I'm going to cultivate the ability to watch myself start to get angry. And when I can watch it, then I'm the one in control, not the anger. Otherwise, the anger takes me. It becomes the ruler, I become the one swept up in the wave, like a leaf. I go where anger goes. So we cultivate that. And we also cultivate in our lives, because it's beautiful to also be in the ocean. The solution to waves is not always stay out of the ocean. It's also beautiful to be able to experience. We're humans, and humans have emotions. We love, we long, we grieve. And these are all beautiful aspects of the spectrum of human life. And so the answer is not always just, you know, stay out of this ocean, stay on the shore, but how to be in love, how to be in the world, but not get tossed about by the waves. And the way to do that is dive deep. Dive as deep as you can. So yeah, there are waves in the world, but they won't impact you, because you'll be so deep in your experience that the waves are only on the surface. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.